lacking of return guys. Speedy B finds a seam. Brandon Banks has some room. Look out! Banks near the 50 to the 40. Brandon Banks down near the 20. He's going to score! Touchdown! Oh my goodness!
Gable running away from defenders. Down the side.
Welcome to Blogski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
All right, Mike, we got to I don't know. You can probably tell the excitement in my voice. We got to talk about Three Down Nation, the new home of myself and the new home of this podcast.
Yeah.
It was formally announced yesterday. We're recording this on Monday. It was formally announced yesterday that our good buddy Drew Edwards of the Hamilton Spectator is starting up his a CFL dedicated website, and he has asked me to be a part of it, and tangentially asked you to be a part of it, because the podcast is coming with us. So that's where you're going to find all my CFL goodies, written and otherwise. It's very exciting. You can probably tell my voice. I'm super pumped for this to get going.
Oh, no doubt, man. I'm just honored to be a small part of it with this podcast. It's As you said, it's very, very exciting to have Drew start up this three down nation. Yeah, I'm just as pumped as you are.
It's interesting. I've been holding this in for a long time. I'm gonna give the story. I wrote a blog yesterday, the last one that will ever be written at the former home of Blogski Wee Wee, thanking both Mark and Eric, who again I can't thank enough for coming on board this past winter. And just kind of, I said in that piece that I would sort of give my side of the story as to how this all came about. It's a bit of a long story, maybe, but I think it's an interesting one. I'm just trying to look up the date here when Drew sent me that very first text message. Believe it or not, I was asleep when Drew sent it. It was in February sometime. I don't really have the date. Oh, wait, here we go. It was February 9th of this year. I got a text from Drew saying, would you mind giving me a call? And I didn't really know what to make of it. He and I have conversed, usually through email in the past. He had asked my opinion on a piece he wrote for the spec a few years ago. So we had been in contact, and we're friendly with one another. I like Drew. I'm pretty sure he likes me. But when he sent me a text message, I thought it was strange. So, of course, I gave him a call back, and we just start chit-chatting like, you do, like what's going on, how you doing, all that sort of stuff. And after the pleasantries were out of the way, he sort of got into, hey, so this is what I'm thinking, and sort of laid out the whole kit and caboodle of what would event like we didn't have a name at the time, but what Three Down Nation would eventually be. Essentially asked if I would like to be involved. It took me about a nanosecond to say yes. And from there, it's just been we've been keeping in contact. It's a little thing, like just everything sort of moving forward. And as we sit here at pretty much 10 o'clock on Monday morning, May the 4th, in about 2 hours from when we record this, although this probably won't go up for a couple of days, you and everyone else will get to enjoy a little Three Down Nation. There's a great group of writers for the site, experienced guys, fans, as well as like committed journalists. It's gonna be, I don't know, I no words really. I just this, like I said before, it's an exciting time. I think fans are gonna like it. I could see this being, it's the first of its kind, so I think we are like right there, ready to explode, man. This is like, oh man, I can't even keep my words straight.
Yeah, it's nice to have like a website joining all the, reporters and bloggers and from each team together on one website. It really is exciting, and I'm really stoked about
Well,
the whole.
yeah, exactly. I just think it's I thought of an idea like this years ago about bringing, like, trying to find a way to bring everyone together and make a one-stop shop for CFL news and opinion. Because as great as the CFL website is, or even TSN's CFL section, there's not a lot of variation in what you get. You know what I mean? Like, there's, it's very much pro league, which is fine. And this site will very much be pro league, but we're also not going to be afraid to criticize things that we think need to be criticized.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think this is more of an independent CFL site that I think fans are really, really going to get behind. At least I hope they do.
Yeah, with the TSN site, I mean, they're the rights holders. They're not gonna, criticize too much, and obviously the CFL.ca isn't gonna criticize because it's CFL.ca. But yeah, it's just a great thing, I'm really looking forward to about 2 hours from now when I get to see the site unveiled.
All right, so we got that out of the way. I'm excited to be a part of Three Down Nation. Mike's excited to be a part of Three Down Nation. Everyone who's involved with Three Down Nation is excited to be a part of Three Down Nation. So let's get into the news since we last picked up the microphones. The big one, obviously, is our buddy, former Hamilton Tiger Cat Chris Williams, or he who shall not be named, signs with the Ottawa Red Blacks. What do you think about that one?
I was pretty shocked when I saw the news on Twitter a couple days ago, I think it was. I heard that he was still getting some tryouts down south. I wasn't expecting him to sign back with the CFL. If he did come back to the CFL, I knew it wouldn't be with the Tiger Cats. I mean, I heard that, you know, him and Austin met and things were amicable, but there's still bad blood there, and there's no way he's coming back to the Tiger Cats. And there's a lot of bad blood from Ticat fans about Chris Williams. And, you know, when it first happened, I wasn't pleased. You know, he still had a year left on his contract, and I really want him to come back. I mean, with the season he had before there with his six return touchdowns,
11 receiving touchdowns, was third in the league in receiving yards, like just under 1,300 yards. He was a monster in that 2012 season here. But yeah, six return touchdowns.
Yeah.
CFL record, six return touchdowns, we should mention.
Yes. Just an outstanding player for the Ticats for 2 years. I don't have the animosity that some Ticat fans have against him. I understand why he did it. Everyone that plays football, especially in the States, wants to be in the NFL eventually. So, you know, he was chasing his dream. He probably made a good amount of money while he was down there, even though he wasn't playing a lot. But he's back now. I think it's good for the league. He's a very exciting player with Banks and Williams returning kicks next year in the East. I mean, that's going to be pretty exciting stuff. So I don't hold any animosity towards him. I'm glad he's back. And I think, you know, the Ticat fans, you know, you boo him. When, if you're at the stadium when he's playing, it won't be until late October, I believe, they play in Hamilton.
Well, they do. Ottawa does come here for a preseason game. On the first preseason game of the year is Ottawa and Hamilton. I don't know if Williams will play just because sometimes I've found that the team that travels doesn't tend to play as many of their starters as the team that's at home.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he will play just because it's the first preseason game. It's the first game that he'll have been in quite some time. This first CFL game in 2.5 years, essentially. So there could be some booing on, I believe it's June the 8th is when the Cats and Red Blacks hook up at Tim Hortons Field.
Yeah, and by all means, boo him. I mean, if I was there, I'd probably boo, but I don't have the viciousness that I've been seeing on Twitter towards him. So I'm glad he's back in the league, and that's pretty much my thoughts on Williams being back.
Yeah, I'm the same as you. Even at the time, I didn't really hold it against him. Obviously, he could have gone about it a different way.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, he wasn't making much money up here. He was obviously getting overtures from down south. I think a day after, maybe even the day of, the settlement that the team, the union, and Williams came to, he was signed by the Saints. So, yeah, it's kind of shady that a team would contact him, an NFL team would contact him while he's still under contract. But at the same time, like you said, the money he was going to make down there, the money he did make down there, I never really had it in me to dislike the guy because, yeah, like he was great when he was here and he wanted to parlay that excellence into a paycheck down south. I didn't hold it against him, and I understand why other fans were angry. Mm-hmm. I just didn't have it in me to really like just get like the vitriol and the venom and the viciousness. I just didn't have it in me. It was like, no, he wants to go make a ton of money, and I'm good for him. Go forward.
Yeah, who doesn't?
Exactly. Know? What do you think of the signing? Like for Ottawa's purposes, the rumor is he's getting about $225,000 for the season, with possible incentive bonuses. Do you like it? Is it a good signing, a bad signing, an in between signing? What do you think?
I like it. Sometimes you see players go down south and come back and they're not the same. But if he's anything like he was for the 2 years that he was with the Ticats, it's a great signing. He brings speed to the offense, a lot of speed, you know, kick return, punt return, whatever they're going to use him for. And he's a great receiver. I mean, over 1,000 yards receiving for us in the second year that he played for the Ticats.
Had over 1,000 his first year too, just barely, but he had over 1,000 both seasons with the Cats.
Yeah, so, I mean, he brings so much to the offense and the special teams. So if he's anything like he was before, I think he's worth that money.
I agree. The caveat is, as you brought up, he has been away. And off the top of my head, I have had a hard time thinking of names of players who went down south for an extended period of time and came back. The only ones that I've been able to sort of bring up, John Chick went down to the Colts, I believe, and I think he played for the Jaguars. And he was gone for a good two, three, maybe even four seasons before he came back to Saskatchewan. And his first season or first half season back, he wasn't as good, but then he sort of got on a roll, and I think he's back to being the player he was when he left Saskatchewan. Arlen Bruce, I believe, was down in the NFL for maybe a year and a half. I know he played for San Francisco, or was at least on their practice roster. Then he came back and essentially had a Hall of Fame-worthy career, at least on the field. We'll leave his off-the-field stuff or his antics to something else that has nothing to do with how he played the game. And Dave Dickinson. I think Dave Dickinson went down after a few years with Calgary and played for the was a backup with the Chargers. I don't think he ever played a bunch.
No.
And I guess Henry Burris would also fit in that category, but again, it didn't play a bunch. But I sometimes wonder if maybe for quarterbacks it's different. Like Williams' game was all speed, essentially. And as you get older, your speed diminishes. Obviously, it's not diminished to the point where he's now like Dave Stowell slow, but I just wonder sometimes those guys the biggest example to me of guys that went down south, came back and just stunk was Casey Printers. Mm-hmm. We're both well aware of how bad he was with the Ticats. Was that his fault? Was that maybe the talent that or lack of talent that was around him at the time? I don't know, but he went down to the Kansas City Chiefs after having MOP numbers. I believe he won the MOP in 2004.
Yeah.
With BC, and came back and just was a shell of his former self. If Williams comes back, it is the type of player he was in 2012. The Red Blacks get a guy who catches 80 to 90 balls, goes for 1,200 yards, double digit touchdowns combined between kicks and receiving and what have you, then yes, absolutely money well spent. But the only concern I would have if I was an Ottawa fan is the time away from the game. But yeah, I think it's a good signing if he is the player he was when he left.
Absolutely.
Now, there seems to be this notion amongst Tiger Cat fans, and being that we are Tiger Cat fans, I think we should speak to it, that and I hesitate to use the word better, but people are sort of putting it out there that Brandon Banks is a better player than Chris Williams. Mm. Now, well, I just have to nip that in the bud. I love Brandon Banks. Don't get me wrong. I think he's worth every penny the team is going to pay him. Or I guess nickel, since we don't have pennies anymore. And I will never forget the East Final last year and his two scintillating punt returns. But I don't really think – I think that any comparison between the two is unfair. Banks hasn't been allowed to be like Williams in the offense. He's been used very sparingly. His numbers obviously are not anywhere close to what Williams put up in his 2 years here. And this is not a knock on Banks at all. I would never consider saying Brandon Banks is a lesser player than anybody. But I think this idea that Tiger Cat fans are going with, oh, well, we don't want Williams anyway because Banks is better, that feels more emotional than based on fact. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think you could compare them. You could maybe say that Banks is a better returner, but even that, it's you know, it's so close that I don't, it's hard to compare them. But as a receiver, Chris Williams is just he's a better receiver at this point.
And he's been given the opportunities, though. Like, I think if Banks was given a larger role in the offense, Like we've seen him. He scored the only touchdown for the Ticats in the Grey Cup. He scored, I think it was five. I think he had five receiving touchdowns last year when considering the quarterback issues that the team had with Caleros hurt and then Lefevre gets hurt and Masoli couldn't hit the broadside of a barn if he tried. I think Banks put up decent numbers, but it's also in an offense that is not really – like Luke Tasker was the leading receiver for the Ticats last year. He didn't crack 1,000 yards. There were only 3,000-yard receivers, period, last year. Whereas I think when Williams was last up here, there was something like 10 or 12. So, I hate the idea that we think one is better than the other. They both are amazing players. They are both exciting to watch, and I think that's what we should really be focusing on is – there's going to come a time when these two guys are going to be on the same field. And I made a joke on Twitter about it when Williams signed, like with these new rules for kick returners, are offenses even going to see the field in these Ottawa Hamilton games? Or is it just going to be, we're kicking to Williams. He takes it for a touchdown. We kick it to Banks. He takes it for a touchdown. Anyway, your thoughts.
Yeah, they're both valuable, very valuable players to each team. If Williams didn't go down south, then we might not have Banks here. So, the more talent, the better in the CFL, as far as I'm concerned. And he, like you were saying, he had like something like five touchdown receptions. Banks did last year for the Ticats, and I remember one was against Montreal in the regular season game that we needed to win to get into the playoffs. And it was a great catch in the end zone for a huge touchdown.
Yep.
So
I remember the play very well.
Yeah, I believe that. You don't want to overdo it with Banks and, tire him out, punt returns, kick returns, in the offense every down. So I think they're going to sparingly use him in the offense. But when he gets in there, he's effective. So if he doesn't have the opportunity to get the yards that Williams did, that doesn't mean that he's not as good or whatever. And I do believe that he's improving as a receiver. I think he improved last year as a receiver. So when he gets in there, he will be effective. And I'm just glad that Banks and Williams are in the same division. It's going to be very, very exciting to watch in the East this year.
Absolutely, absolutely. One last bit of we'll touch on this, then we'll move on to something else. I don't know how many Ottawa Red Blacks fans you follow or writers you follow that cover the Red Blacks, but it seemed to me that as soon as Williams signed, all of them were all of a sudden it was Ottawa has the best receiving core in the league. Maurice Price, Chris Williams, Brad Sinopoli, Greg Ellingson, Marcus Henry, the list goes on and on. And I think on paper, yes, I agree with them. That is a very potent receiving core, especially with a guy like Henry Burris. If Burris refines his mojo, I think that could be a really deadly group. But the key word in there is could. Aside from Williams – as we talked about with his back-to-back 1,000-yard campaigns, that's a group that really is more of a potential-laden group than one where you can point to actual statistics and say this is why they're great. I don't think Maurice Price has ever played a full season. I'm also pretty sure he was a healthy scratch in the West Final last year, although he did end up playing in the Grey Cup. Greg Ellingson had that phenomenal start to his rookie campaign and then had a hard time getting back on the field. Mm-hmm. Brad Sinopoli, who everyone in Ottawa seems to love because he played for the GGs and all that stuff, his numbers aren't really that impressive at receiver. He's obviously grown into the role, and maybe he's ready for a breakout, but to say he's a top Canadian receiver to me is frankly ludicrous. He's never shown that he can be. And Marcus Henry was the go-to guy for Ottawa last year, and his numbers weren't all that impressive. No one on Ottawa's offense numbers were impressive last year. So I'm not sure where this maybe it's off-season hope. Maybe it's just because Williams signed and everyone was excited, but I don't really find the idea that Ottawa is the undisputed, as of right now, top receiving core to be very accurate. Your thoughts?
I'd agree with that. It does look impressive on paper. Another receiving corps that seems impressive on paper is Montreal with all their signings. You got Fred Stamps signed there, Nick Lewis, SJ Green re-signed. So a lot of teams look pretty impressive on paper. It's just we just have to wait till the season starts to see which team gels, which team gets it going. But I also like Hamilton's receiving corps, with Grant, Fantuz, Banks, Singfield, Tasker, and so on. So there's a lot of continuity there with the Ticats. So they could be in the running for the best receiving corps in the league. But yeah, you're right. It's just on paper now, and if it gets the Ottawa fans excited, that's a good thing.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, so moving on, the other sort of big league-wide non-Ticat news of the last little while was the Drew Willey extension in Winnipeg. I was both, and this might sound stupid, surprised and not surprised that he got a contract extension. He was obviously going to be a free agent at the end of the year. He showed a lot of flashes last year of being able to be a starting caliber, quality caliber starter in the Canadian Football League, but his numbers weren't impressive. And this sort of he's going to get 400 grand, which is like that's Ricky Ray, Henry Burris, Anthony Calvillo, like that's superstar quarterback money. After one full season as a starter seemed premature. And I understand that this year he'll still be making the same money that he made last year. The extension doesn't kick in until the year after, so Winnipeg could obviously get out of the deal. But yeah, I'm not sure if he's shown enough to warrant that kind of money. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think this year they put in some more bonuses. So if he does have a really good year, he gets the opportunity to make a bit more money. But yeah, you're right. I think it was partially, Winnipeg thinking that he has a lot of potential and we can't take the chance of him leaving, signing with another team. I thought he looked really good early on in the season last year. Winnipeg got off to a hot start.
Yeah,
And then.
6-1, I think it was.
Yeah, and
And a
then he
couple of
kind of.
big comeback wins, and yeah, I agree.
Yeah, that comeback win against Hamilton, which I don't. Still makes me. Gives me chills. But yeah, he did fall off in the later half of the season, as did the whole Winnipeg team. So I think we're going to see if he's for real this year. I mean, it looks like he's going to have a little bit better protection, maybe have a little bit more time to throw. So this is the year that he has to prove himself, and no guaranteed contracts. So if he doesn't pan out this year, then I guess they can just get rid of him. So we'll see what happens this year. I think that he's a good quarterback. I think that he has a lot of potential. I like his composure in the pocket. I like his arm. So we'll see what happens.
I do have a like, and this is not with Willie. I have a concern, and it's he's getting this money after the one season he had. What are Edmonton and Hamilton going to have to pay their starters after this year? Caleros, his first full season as a starter, and wasn't even a full season; it was essentially a half a season. Guides him to the Grey Cup. Mike Riley, who I think could be the best quarterback in the league all around if he stays healthy. Took an Edmonton team that essentially changed the head coach and kept a lot of the same players and got them from last place to the Western Final. And not to sort of put the cart before the horse, but I think Hamilton and Edmonton have a really good shot of meeting in the Grey Cup this year. And as of right now, if we were to ask to make predictions, we're not. We'll do that on a later podcast, close to the start of season. My prediction would be Edmonton and Hamilton in the Grey Cup. So if Willie's getting 400 grand based on the season he had in Winnipeg last year, what are the Cats going to have to pay Caleros? What are the Eskimos going to have to pay Mike Riley? It seems as if this deal sort of pushed quarterback numbers up for guys who have had more success, which should happen, but this seems like a little bit much for a guy who didn't really do all that much last year.
Yeah, I see your point there. I'm not sure what exactly Claros is making right, or Riley is making right now. I would assume it's in the 300 range, maybe. But yeah, I think they're gonna have to. it's kind of sets a precedent, you might say. But yeah, like Calero's leading the team to the Grey Cup, and if he does it again this year, I mean, you'd think he'd be like one of the highest paid players in the league.
Yeah,
Same.
especially if they win. If they get back and they win, and even if they
Yeah.
get back, he'll get a huge chunk of money on his next deal. But if they
Yeah.
get back and win, and he goes 2 years here, two Grey Cup appearances, and one championship, they're going to have to basically just open up the vault and just give him whatever he wants.
Yeah.
And Grant, don't get me wrong, if he does that, he will be worth it. The only point is they are allowed. This team is so talented now because Caleros doesn't make that much money. So if you bump him up from say 275, 300 to something in the 450 to 500 range, because let's be honest, if he continues to progress and the Cats continue to win, he's going to have to get more than Willie. He's not going to accept the same amount. That would be ridiculous. He's going to get more. You're taking an extra 200,000 essentially off the cap. That is two pretty good players that you could sign for that amount of money.
Yeah, for sure.
I obviously have faith in the team to figure out what to do, and everyone will do right by everyone, and it'll be fine. And same with Edmonton, I think they'll figure it out. But this sets an interesting precedent for quarterback contracts in the future.
Yeah, it shows that with the cap rising, that the higher end players usually get the bulk of the money, and the lower end players don't really get anything.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely. Now let's get into some Tiger Cat news. How about that, buddy?
Yes.
I guess the big one are the dual Achilles injuries that happened to defensive tackle Lyndon Gadosh and receiver Spencer Watt. When I heard that news, and the news came out like one after another, it was like less than 5 minutes between, oh, Gadosh tore his Achilles out for the year, and then it was like, I would suggest maybe 90 seconds later, Spencer Watt tore his Achilles out for the season. It was like, holy crap. I'm not as worried about the Gadosh injury because Hamilton employs 9,000 defensive tackles that are Canadian. So,
Yeah.
and it's not like he was going to be a starter. He wasn't supplanting Ted Laurent or Brian Baelke. So the Gadosh injury, which sucks, don't get me wrong, I think he could have been a very good rotational player, would have been able to keep all those guys fresh going on in the season, and he was the number one overall pick for a reason. The Cats did draft him tops in 2013, so he's clearly a guy that has talent. But again, with all the with all the defensive tackles on the team, it's his loss to me isn't as significant.
I would agree with that. Now, did they suffer the injuries on the field in minicamp, or was it in the were they tr like training in the weight room? Because I'm not sure.
They weren't at minicamp. Gadosh was in Calgary working out.
Okay.
I believe he was at the University of Calgary, which is where he went to school, like doing his off-season training. Spencer Watt was, I don't know where he was. I have seen murmurs. Again, these are completely uncorroborated, and I'm even hesitant to bring them up, that he hurt himself playing basketball, like pick up basketball. Which, players like Terrell Suggs a few years ago when he the defensive linebacker for the Baltimore Ravens did the same thing. Tore his Achilles playing pickup basketball. So, like, injuries happen. So, yeah, neither of them were on the field, though. So, they didn't happen at minicamp.
Okay. Yeah, it's tough, you know. I feel bad for both of them. Especially Gadosh with all his injury history. So, you know, it's gonna be tough for him to come back if he comes back. But like you said, you know, we have 9,000 defensive tackles that are Canadian, so you know someone's just gonna have to step up. You know, Atkinson, Hazimi, you know, they could fill a role in the rotation on the defensive line. And with Watt gone, you know, you got a couple of Canadian receivers in the shadows. Coates or Giovane, I believe is how you pronounce it.
Aprile.
Yes. So yeah, new guys are just gonna have to step up. I'm not too worried. Some people are, but I think we have the depth that we can survive both these injuries.
I agree. Watt's injury is more concerning for me just because he was penciled in to be that second Canadian starter. So now the Cats are going to have to rejig the ratio a little bit. You probably saw it. I wrote a piece about that a few days ago, sort of given the options of what they could do. This is not a like the season's over. They're done. That's it. No, these are two injuries that like we can all agree they suck from a team perspective, but they're not ones that can't be overcome. It's not like Caleros tore his Achilles and now all of a sudden there's no quarterback. Going forward, I think the team will be fine. The one thing I really also kind of want to nip in the bud here is this idea that the Cats should bring back Dave Stala. Don't get me wrong, I know you're a big Stala fan. I love the guy, but I don't think moving forward the team should look at an option like that. I know the emotion of it would be, oh, he's coming home for that one last run at a cup, and I think, like you said, look to the young guys on the team, or maybe just, rejig the ratio and bring those other young guys along.
Yeah, and like Austin always says in interviews, if you're on the team, we expect you to perform when you get the chance. So if Coates or Giovanni get a chance to be in the lineup as a starter, he will expect them to produce. So yeah, the Stala thing, I love Stala. I've got a Stala jersey on my wall that's signed. I'm a huge Stala guy, but I think his time has passed him, and we need to look to the future.
Completely agree. Completely agree. So the other bits of Ticat news, I took a little bit of crap about the Cats going over the cap, and rightfully so because I have been and will continue to be someone who is a critic of teams that go over the cap. I don't think the Cats get a pass for this. They shouldn't have done it. And maybe people will call me a hypocrite, and that's fine. But this happening sort of made me reevaluate, and maybe we all need to reevaluate the way we look at the salary cap. It's not a cap. There's no cap on salaries in the CFL. It's a number, which what was it, $5 million last year? It's a number that teams are allowed to spend on salaries without incurring a penalty. It's more of a luxury tax, like you see in the NBA and Major League Baseball. It's not a cap like in the NFL. The NFL, you're not allowed to go over the salary cap. The NHL, you're not allowed to go over the salary cap. If a guy gets hurt and you have to pay him and his money counts towards the cap, because in hockey especially, like those contracts are guaranteed. You can't just cut a guy because he got hurt or because he's underperforming. You have to keep that money stays on the books. If you have two, you don't have enough guys to field a team. I remember, I think it was the Calgary Flames a few years ago, had to go out there with like 17 skaters or whatever the number is in hockey. I'm not a huge hockey fan. They had to play with one less guy because they simply could not afford to bring someone up. In the CFL, that's not the case. Guy gets hurt or you release a guy, the numbers are off the books, or it's not a salary cap. And maybe, and again, I say this as someone who is a proponent of keeping teams at or under the cap, that I was wrong. Maybe everyone else sort of needs to, I don't want to say follow my lead, but maybe we need to sort of rethink how we view what the cap actually is.
I wasn't happy about it. I wasn't happy about it when the Rough Riders went over a couple years ago. They went over a couple times. They should
The
play.
Riders have gone over it 4 times since now, and granted, when this happened, every violation of the number got lower and lower and lower. Like the Ticats went over by like less than what, $8,400. So it's not like they got an extra player out of the deal or something like that. Like Montreal, the very first team to go over, they were over like $110,000, something like that, and they got fined a draft pick as well. But yeah, so sorry to interrupt.
No, it's all good. But yeah, I'd like every team to be under the cap or the salary management system or whatever you want to call it. But like you said, I have it written down here. It's technically not a cap. And it doesn't I wouldn't I'd like them to be under, but it doesn't offend me that they were a little bit over. Like you said, it is not like they were $100,000, $200,000 over it. So I'd like in the future, I'd like to see them under the 5 million or whatever it's going to be next year, but it doesn't, it's not a huge thing to me personally.
And with that, I think if we're all going to be up in arms over the cap, and again, many people were, and myself being one of them, we have to really do you want the cap to be a hard cap? Like, I think the salaries go up to, I think it's 5.05 million this year. That's it. Do we make it to the point where no, you can't go over it, or do we stay at this sort of soft cap, luxury cap system where if teams violate it, teams violate it, and they pay a fine? That's what happens in baseball. The Yankees over the cap every year. And they just pay the fine. The LA Lakers in the NBA are essentially over the cap every year. The New York Knicks go over the cap every year. They just pay the fine. I used to think, okay, and maybe just because it's coincided twice with the Riders winning the Grey Cup. They've gone over and they've won. But if you look at teams historically that do that, the Yankees don't win every year. The Lakers were one of the worst teams in the NBA last year. So just because you're spending that extra money on players doesn't necessarily buy you a championship. When the NHL had no cap and the Leafs were one of the top spenders, or the Rangers would spend money ridiculously, neither of those teams were any good. Well, the Leafs were decent for a while there with Pat Quinn as head coach, but the Rangers were always the highest team with the highest salary, and they were always finishing in like 12th place. So maybe we, and again, this comes from me sort of reevaluating my stance on it. Maybe we're just a little too gung-ho about it. And also maybe it was just because it's the Riders, and right now, whether their fans want to admit it or not, they're kind of public enemy number one. You either love them or you hate them, and there's way more people that hate them. So when they do something, we tend to jump on them a little bit more. I don't know. I'm thinking I just think we need to rethink the way we look at this thing, and maybe then this won't be a big deal going forward.
Yep, I agree. So I'm just gonna, you wanna just run, I'm gonna run down the Ticats that were released
Sure.
this week.
Yeah, that was a. It's not a surprising lot, but yeah, give it a go.
So we got receiver Kerry Koch, offensive lineman Everett Bernard, wide receiver Lamar Bryant, defensive back Taylor Mack, defensive lineman Adwali.
Adewale Ajomo?
There, yeah,
Ojomo?
that sounds about right. Running back Sam Ejiri, linebacker Jonathan Sharp, defensive lineman Brandon Thurman, and defensive back EJ Woods.
Yeah, out of that group, Ojiri played in one game last year. The one after, who are they playing? Might have been BC. Delone Carter played in that game. They were the two tailbacks because both it was before Grigsby got here, and Gable and Madu had both been hurt. Is it Thur Brandon Thurmond? Thurmond, the defensive lineman. I think he played in a game too. I think he was inserted in week two after the debacle in Regina in week one. Then he got hurt, and you know, he looked like he could have had a future, but you get hurt, some guy steps up and takes your spot. It just that's unfortunate. But obviously the big name is Kerry Koch, big free agent signing last year, and again seeing him released, not really that much of a surprise.
No.
I didn't. I don't recall. I remember he returned kicks in the Labor Day game against Toronto, and I think he was the guy that fumbled. I think it was a punt, might have been a kickoff, the following week against Montreal, and I don't think he saw the field after that. So he was probably making decent money. Free agent signings tend to get into the six figures. So seeing him released when, you know, Sinkfield came in and played well, and a lot of the new guys, the guy with the huge hair, Underwood, Taquan Underwood, he's probably gonna, he comes cheaper, probably going to make the team. Seeing none of these guys really stood out as, oh my God, that's shocking. Koch obviously being the biggest name though.
I think Koch was brought in mostly because of his speed. And as of right now, we have an abundance of speed in the receiving corps and on the team. So, yeah, I wasn't surprised. Wasn't surprised to see him go. I'm sure he'll find employment somewhere else. I'm gonna miss his flowing locks, but other than that, not a big surprise. I hope all these guys find jobs. They probably not all of them probably will, but good luck to them.
Yeah, same here. Good luck to all those guys. Yeah, there's not really much else I can really add to that. It's it sort of is what it is, and football's a tough business, but what are you going to do?
Exactly.
And speaking of the business of football, let's make fools of ourselves. You feel like in the mood to make some predictions that are going to make you look like an idiot?
Let's do this.
All right, so the draft is week Tuesday. Again, we've been over this. You guys are probably going to, listeners out there are going to say, like, we've heard that you don't know anything about the draft. Don't know dick about the draft. I've sort of learned, and a lot of it is thanks to our good buddy Eric with his goal line post blog. Used to do some work over at Blogski Wee Wee. Now that that's ending and we're going over to Three Down Nation, he's going to continue to do his own thing. He is really, really whip smart when it comes to draft stuff. He's studied film. He's obviously watched games. He's really sort of getting himself into a niche that I think is could be very lucrative for him in the future. You don't see a lot of guys really covering the draft. So a lot of my opinion is sort of influenced by Eric's writings. So looking at sort of how the offseason has played out, what do you see as sort of the Ticats' needs in this draft?
Well, with you can never go wrong with offensive linemen. Bringing in a Canadian offensive lineman is never a bad thing. We might want to bring in some wide receivers, as there's some talent there. Supposedly this is one of the deepest drafts in many years. But I'm looking at all the players that have been invited to mini camps in the
Oh my God,
NFL.
it's like the entire first round of a
I
CFL
know.
mock draft. Like, it's run down the list if you got it there.
Yeah, I got it. You got Tyler Varga, running back, signed a 3-year contract with the Colts. Quarterback Brandon Bridge, signed with the Cowboys. Wide
Wait, the
receiver Lamar
Cowboys?
Durant. Yeah.
I thought he was going to Detroit.
I believe it was the Cowboys. I saw it
Oh.
on. I could be wrong.
No, I if you say Cowboys, I just remember the day of the draft, there was a lot of talk of he was going to Detroit. I even saw some posts about it, but maybe he changed his mind. You keep going. I'm gonna look that up.
All right. Wide receiver Lamar Durant, mini camp invite with the Giants. A lot of these mini camp invites were from the New York Giants, so they got an eye on Canada or Canadian players. Defensive lineman Darrell Waud, mini camp Giants. Defensive back Tavon Campbell, who was at the CFL Combine, who ran that 4.35 40, I believe. Mini camp invite with the Giants. Offensive lineman Alex Mattes, mini camp with the Jets. Defensive lineman Max Ford, mini camp with Seahawks. Offensive lineman Jacob Ruby, mini camp Giants. Offensive lineman Sean McCune, mini camp with the Giants.
Holy
Offensive
crap,
lineman,
you weren't lying about the Giants.
yeah, I know. Offensive lineman Soup Chung, mini camp Giants. Linebacker Brian Archibald, Giants mini camp. Offensive lineman Brett Boyko, signed with the Eagles. And defensive lineman Christian Covington, drafted by Houston in the 6th round.
Okay, so Covington's with a team. He's obviously going to sign a contract. And I think we all sort of knew that he was he they were always talking about him being a draft. He was going to go in the draft somewhere. And you said Vargas signed with the Colts
Yes.
and Boyko signed with the Eagles.
Yes, with the Eagles,
And the rest are mini camp invites.
yep.
Okay, so I don't think you would have seen Varga go in the first round. I think because of sort of his pedigree at Yale, I think he was always going to be a guy that was going to get an NFL shot. Same with Brandon Bridge. And speaking of, I looked it up. You're right. He is headed to the Dallas Cowboys. That's weird because it's funny because you Google Brandon Bridge and you get two news stories. The big one is that he's headed to the Cowboys, and there's a smaller one underneath that talks about him being an undrafted free agent going to the Lions. So maybe he was going to the Lions and then changed his mind at the last minute. Who knows? But you're right. He is going to Dallas.
Yeah, I got all that information from Justin Dunk, by the way, his Twitter account. So shout out to him.
Well, that it, well, there's very few people in the know with Canadian draft prospects than Justin Dunk. So If he says it, I will believe it, and Google supports him, so he's right, and I was wrong. First mistake of our draft preview. First of many, I should say.
Yeah.
So with all those guys going to mini camps, I think the mini camps are this upcoming weekend. Most of those NFL camps happen, so they're going to be happening before the CFL draft. I think we'll get a good sort of good idea of who is going to be making it to main camp and who is still be draft eligible. There are a lot of mini camp invites, and yeah, that does sound like a pretty potent number of Canadian players heading to, especially the New York Giants. Holy crap, there's a lot of Giants. You said the Giants a lot.
Yeah, and we don't know how serious, you know, the teams are about these guys. You know, maybe they're just getting luck and they won't be signed. Who knows? So hopefully the CFL teams get a good feel of, you know, if these NFL teams are for real with these guys. And otherwise, they're going to be, you know, pretty clueless and taking a lot of chances with a lot of these players.
Yeah, I think you're gonna see some of these guys who are in these mini camps go in the first round anyway. Although the one name that I have written down here as a top player in the draft that I didn't hear you mention was Danny Gruel, the offensive lineman from Laval. Yeah, okay, I thought it was from Laval. I didn't hear his name mentioned, so that might push him up to the top overall pick because there was always talk about it being Alex Mateus. Mm-hmm. The UConn guy who's from Ottawa being the top guy because hometown kid. Ottawa needs offensive linemen. Seems like a pretty sure pick. But if he's getting interest from the – I'm going to guess the New York Giants. Again, you've said so many guys going to the Giants. I can't remember who went where. But I'm going to guess he's going to the Giants.
Not the Giants, but another New York team, the Jets.
Oh, he's going to the Jets?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Damn it. I thought he was one of the Giants guys. But okay, still heading to Jersey.
Yep.
If he's getting NFL looks, then maybe the Red Blacks bypass him and take Gruel first overall.
I could see that. I could see that for sure.
And kind of looking at the Ticats' needs, I agree with you. It's offensive linemen. And with the injury to Spencer Watt, I think now especially they should be looking at wide receiver. But I think I think they're going to go receiver. That's my prediction. I think they're going to pick a receiver with the first pick. Just because, like, when you look at the Canadian draft, it's offensive linemen, it's receivers, and it's usually defensive linemen, and you sprinkle in a few defensive backs. Hamilton doesn't really need Canadian defensive backs. They have their two starters. So I guess maybe they could use sort of a backup, although Neil King and Mike Daly can back up Craig Butler. And unfortunately, I'm drawing a blank as to who Courtney Stevens' usual backup is, but that's really neither here nor there. So maybe, but I don't see that maybe as a first-round pick. That's more of a value pick later on. And I look at the offensive linemen, Mateus, Gruel, Suka Chung. Again, yeah. I butchered his name.
I think he was a Dino. He played for the Calgary Dinos.
Played for Calgary. And Sean McEwen, I think he also played for Calgary.
I believe so.
Yeah. So those are sort of like in all – like again, like I said, I go to Eric and at Goal Line Post for sort of my draft knowledge. But I've seen those guys be top – five, top seven picks, but they're usually always gone by the time Hamilton's picking. Now, maybe them getting invites to the NFL pushes them down a little bit, and Hamilton can get one of these guys. But I could see maybe a Lamar Durant or another guy who didn't get a camp invite, Nick Dembski from the University of Manitoba, being sort of Hamilton's first-round pick. They can bring him along slowly. I think Fantuz is at the end of his contract this year. I hope he resigns, but again – you never know. Austin's very fond of sort of, yeah, he keeps some veteran players, but he doesn't mind letting a guy go if he thinks that he can find someone cheaper and better. So I think Hamilton, my prediction is Durant or Dembski. Unless one of those linemen fall, then I could see them picking one of those.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think Nick Dembski really impressed at the combine this year, I've heard, even more so than Durant, which was surprising because Durant was you know, there's a lot of hype behind Durant as, you know, the next great Canadian receiver in the CFL or maybe even the NFL. I'm seeing here on Justin Dunk's timeline that Dembski didn't get invited to a minicamp, but apparently he spoke to the Arizona Cardinals in the lead up to the NFL draft. So, you know, take that for what you will. But yeah, I'd like to see Dembski or Durant in a Ticats uniform, and never, like I said before, you never go wrong with offensive linemen. So we'll see how it all plays out. I'm looking forward to seeing the draft this year. I believe it's in prime time this year. So
Yeah, it's either 7 or 8 o'clock on Tuesday night.
yeah, so
I want to say 8 o'clock, and I think
yeah.
the first two rounds are on TSN, and then the rest of the draft will be on TSN.ca. I'll be watching, but I'm not going to let you get out of here without making a prediction. If I put my reputation on the line saying that they're going to pick a receiver, Durant or Dembski, you're doing the same, buddy. You're putting it out there. You're not hanging up on me without doing this.
All right, well, I'm gonna say the exact same thing. I think they're gonna go with receiver as well. So I'm not I we're both gonna be hung out to dry if they go with someone else. So I'll go with Dembski or Durant as well.
All right, perfect. So there you have it, folks. You have our predictions. Feel free to make fun of us. I'm sure we'll both be wrong.
I'll have my fingers crossed that they pick one of them on draft.
On May 12th?
Yes.
Yeah, me too. All right, buddy. It's your turn. Your favorite segment of the week. Let's get to
Question.
those Twitter questions.
All right, let's do this. All right, first one comes from TXA2002. It's kind of a smart ass question, but who do you think will beat the Ticats in the Grey Cup this season?
Okay.
Yeah,
Well, hey, at least he's got the Cats going to the Grey Cup.
that's true.
That's a plus. I'll take that. If they lose in the Grey Cup this year, the team that's beating them is coming from Alberta, and it's not the defending Grey Cup champions. Like I said earlier, I think it's Hamilton and Edmonton in the Cup this year. I think Hamilton will win, but if they're gonna lose, they're losing to the Eskimos.
Yeah, I could see that as well. I like the Eskimos, I like their defense. I like Mike Riley a lot. Yeah, I'm gonna say the same thing. I think they're, it's gonna be tough getting to the Grey Cup this year with Montreal and Ottawa improving, but I do believe, fingers crossed, that they will make it back there. And if they do make it back, I believe it'll be, like you said, against Edmonton or Calgary. I don't see Saskatchewan getting there, or Winnipeg or BC. So I'll agree with you. And if they're gonna get beat, it'll probably be by the Eskimos.
And to touch on what you just brought up about Ottawa and Montreal getting better, you're absolutely 100% correct. What the Cats did, however, is they have continuity that I don't think we have seen in these parts, maybe ever, to be perfectly honest with you. Something like 41 of the 46 players that were on the Grey Cup roster are coming back. So all the coaches are back. I think where at Montreal and Ottawa are obviously in chase mode because the Ticats are the two-time defending East Division champions. I think that like whereas they upgraded significantly, both of them did, and I think both of them are going to be in the hunt for a playoff spot and maybe even the division championship. What Hamilton has is continuity, so we didn't see the Ticats make those splashes in free agency like they normally do. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they have been caught by the two teams behind them. That's not to say that Montreal or Ottawa can't beat them and can't make it to the Grey Cup, but I still do think Hamilton is the team to beat in the East.
Absolutely. All right, question number two comes from Hammy A-hole. Do the Cats get cap relief from Watts and Gadosh injuries?
Well, obviously they're going to put them on the six game. If they're gone for the season, they're going to be on the six-game injured list, 3 consecutive times. They're, which means their salaries are paid, but they don't count against the cap. So if that's what he means by cap relief, then yeah, they do get cap relief because while they're going to get a paycheck, their numbers come off the cap, which are probably pretty significant numbers. Watt was probably in the 120 to 130 range. And Gadosh, as a number one overall pick and also having NFL interest, I doubt is making league minimum. So maybe he's in maybe in the $75,000 range. Add in the release of Kerry Koch, who again was probably making in the 1 to 120 range, you're probably close to 275, 300,000 in money the Cats are now have now off the cap. So, and maybe they've already spent that money on bringing guys in, but again, they didn't really sign anybody to they signed the contract extensions with Tasker and Banks, and they signed some of their own guys. So the Cats might have a little bit of wiggle room this year should they need to pick someone up during the season. So, yes, the answer is yes, they will get cap relief from the injuries.
Yeah, nothing to add to that. That's pretty much my thoughts. USFL Tecmo, which team will be the biggest surprise this year, good or bad?
It's tough. Is Ottawa being good really a surprise? Like, aren't they certain – they've sort of loaded up in the in a way to make themselves good. So I wouldn't be shocked if they were a 8-9 win team and finished second or third in the division and made the playoffs. So it, again, with a 9-team league, it's kind of hard to pick a team that's going to be good or bad. I think the team that might surprise us all, and it's not that they're going to be bad, but I think there's going to be a bit of maybe a bit of a learning curve, is BC. I feel like BC is ready to take maybe a little bit of a break from being, I think they've made the playoffs like 18 consecutive years or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's always hard to predict a team's going to miss the playoffs when they haven't missed the playoffs for an entire teenager's life. But I could see BC. If I'm going to pick a team that might sort of, I don't want to say be bad, but maybe underachieve, I'll say the BC Lions.
All right. Well, I'm going to pick the BC Lions to be a surprise in the good category, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yes. To me, it's all about Travis Lule. You know, if he can stay healthy, I think they have a pretty good receiving corps. I think if Andrew Harris has a good year, they can be a better team than people expect them to be. I love their linebackers. You know, I think they have a pretty decent defense still. So, and with Jeff Tedford coming in, you know, he's a big-name guy from the U.S. college ranks. He was a offensive coordinator, I guess, last year with the Buccaneers before he got some health issues. But I think Wally Bono has a lot of confidence in Tedford, and I think he can bring something to the Canadian game. You know, he used to be in the league a long time ago under Buono, I believe, with the Stampeders. So he knows the CFL. I think they could surprise the league this year. You know, he's been bringing in names from the U.S. that might not have came up north without him being the coach. So we'll see how that plays out. So I'm gonna pick the BC Lions to be a surprise in the good category.
Okay, I think my pick of BC was more of a process of elimination. Yeah. I don't think – because I still think Calgary and Edmonton are going to be really good. So I knocked them off.
Yeah. Well, it's so hard. It's so hard. You know, like Saskatchewan could be good. They could be bad. Winnipeg's made improvements. It's so hard to predict.
The only team that I think that's going to, like, and I hesitate to say definitely be bad is Toronto, because they did jack all offseason to really improve a team that missed the playoffs last year. But at the same time, they have Ricky Ray. Now, if Ricky Ray's not healthy, and from the sounds of it, he has a bit of a shoulder issue, the likes of which Travis Lule had last year, Toronto does not have a Kevin Glenn waiting in the wings to get them to a 9 or 10 win season while Ray recovers. If Ray's not playing for Toronto, they will more than likely be the worst team in the CFL. There's like the reason they're as good as they are is because of Ricky Ray. Mm-hmm. And if they don't have him, they're going to be very, very bad. But again, that's not a surprise. No one's going to be surprised that Toronto's bad, because you'll look at, well, they made no moves in the offseason. They didn't upgrade anything, really. I can't think of a single free agent that they signed. It's all been bringing in guys no one's heard about before. So to me, Toronto being bad isn't a surprise. So again, like I said, it was pretty much with BC being a process of elimination where someone in the West has to miss the playoffs, at least one of them, if not two. If Ottawa's improved to the point that they make the playoffs, I don't see Montreal sliding. I don't see Hamilton sliding. So if you get three teams in the East, two teams in the West have got to miss the playoffs, and it's just tough to pick which one of those teams it'll be. So I put my neck on the line, and I said the BC Lions. Because again, I think, like you said, Winnipeg has improved. I think that they have a shot to maybe be a third place team and sort of get into the Western semifinals. Saskatchewan, Lord knows I'm never allowed to say anything bad about Saskatchewan or else I'll get like ripped a third butthole. But yeah, they could be good or bad. I don't know where they're going. Is Durant fully recovered? Like, will he get hurt? I don't know.
Yeah, I think he is fully recovered, but yeah.
But every time I think Saskatchewan's going to have a bad season, they run off 10 or 11 wins. So I don't really know. The one year I thought they'd be pretty good recently was after those back-to-back Grey Cups. They brought in what's-his-name, Greg Marshall, and he got fired halfway through the season, and they were the worst team in the CFL. So it's really tough to pick who you think is going to be bad because especially at this stage of the game, you look at every team and can say, well, this is why they'll be good. You made a great case for the BC Lions. And convince me, yeah, you know what? They do have a lot of big-name guys. They did bring in some players. Like, they have Jeff Tedford as a coach. They brought in George Cortez as an offensive coordinator, and he's a wonderful offensive coordinator. Terrible head coach, great offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. So you're right. I just picking one, it's going to be difficult. But we know for a fact three teams are going to miss the playoffs, so three teams are going to be quote-unquote bad. Yeah. Who are they going to be? We'll find out. It's rarely, if ever, the same three teams every year. So, and last year everyone kind of got a free square with Ottawa being as bad as they were. So who knows? There's honestly, who knows?
Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, every year I get really excited about the CFL season started, but this year it seems like there's going to be, you know, quite a few contenders that could make that push for a cup. So I'm beyond pumped for the season to get started.
Hold on. Before you go on, Ottawa was a two-win team last year, mm-hmm. and we're talking about them. Like I just said it earlier in the show. Maybe they can make the Grey Cup. They were a two-win team last year, yeah. and I'm saying they because of all the changes they made, maybe they can make it. That tells me that this thing is wide open, and there is no guarantees anywhere. And like you, I am pumped for this thing to get going. We're less than a month away from training camps, and once those open, like the weather's nice. Like oh. I'm excited. You got me pumped. Pumped.
Is it June yet? No.
No.
But it's getting close.
But it's May, and May is 1 month from June.
Exactly. All right, Oschietti, I think we might have touched on this already, but what do the Cats do ratio-wise to overcome the injuries to Watt and Gaydosh?
We did touch on this, but we can go in a little bit more in depth. Like I said, when we were talking about the injuries earlier, I wrote a piece on it, so I'll sort of run down sort of what I brought up. The top thing I thought is they could just start the two Canadian defensive tackles. The starters will be Brian Baalke, who's coming off an injury, and the reigning, defending, undisputed – no, wait, that's not right. Ted Laurent, the Eastern nominee for top Canadian last year. Those guys are starters. Baalke was a starter before he got hurt. Laurent is the most outstanding Canadian from these. He's obviously a starter. Plug those two guys in. Then you lose Watt on offense. And you only have to start Fantuz as a receiver on offense because now you're starting four Canadians on defense and three Canadians on offense. Again, the Gaydosh injury we talked about, not hugely worried about because he was not going to be a starter. He was going to be a rotational player. So what the team does with filling his role, I believe you brought up Michael Atkinson earlier.
Yeah.
That's pretty much all I have to do. And I think you said, what was the other guy? Hazim.
Yeah.
You pronounce his name again. Another talented young Canadian defensive lineman. So I don't think they really have to worry about what to do ratio-wise with Gaydosh. It's more with Watt. So the first thing I thought they could do is just start two Canadian defensive tackles, which they can do. That means that Brian Hall, who is also a player I love, is more of a rotational player. But they'll figure it out. Another thing they can do is start three Canadian offensive linemen. They started two last year, mostly, I think, because Peter Diakowski was hurt. And from all reports from minicamp, he is back. He's healthy. He's at 100%. He's ready to go. So it's as simple as slotting him in. Filer starts at center. O'Neill starts the other guard. The downside to that, however, is you move an all-star guard in Brian Simmons, and you kick him out to tackle, and then you have to take either – Jake Olson or Joel Figueroa, who are just like mountains when it comes, like they're enormous human beings. Yeah. One of those guys comes off the field. So there's some downside there. Another point I made was you could use Anthony Woodson as a slot back. I saw an interview with him where he had said that he had been working as a receiver and a slot back in minicamp this week. So, again, they signed him to a fairly lucrative deal. I think he's getting about $100,000 to $110,000, which is a lot for a guy who's essentially going to be a special teams player, but I think they're looking for a role for him on offense. And the other possible solution is you draft a Canadian wide receiver, you draft a Dembski or a Durant, and you start him from day one. That has its own problems. If you want to go in-depth, you can go to blogskiwiwi.ca and check out what I had to write. But those, to me, are sort of the four big things that they could do to sort of help with the ratio with those two injuries.
Yeah, that pretty much covers it. Okay, on Rough Riders, what's the Cats week one starting D line?
You take this one first.
All right. I was going to, you know, it's hard for me to take off Bulky, but I have here Norwood, Laurent, Hall, and Hickman, which would make the ratio a little bit different. The ratio that I had was, you know, just the seven starters would be Fantuz, Coates, Laurent, Stevens, Butler, Dykowski, Filer. So, you know, it's hard, you know, Bulky and Hall could do a rotation. It's hard to take out Hall because he played so well last year. So yeah. If I had to write it down right now, it'd be Norwood, Laurent, Hall, Hickman.
Hard to disagree with that. I'm going to make the switch. I'm going to take Hall out and put in Bulky. I think they're going to start to maybe just the beginning of the year before they find sort of someone. I don't think Coates is ready to be a starter. Like you said earlier, he's on the team, so he should be able to contribute. And granted, they're probably going to throw him out at wideside, and he's going to run go routes and not see the ball a lot. But at the same time, that just means that defenses don't have to focus on him. And I think you want the best talent out there that you can put out there so that you don't know where someone's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to make the change, and I'm going to say it's going to be Norwood, Bulky, Laurent, and Hickman. But again, either one wouldn't surprise me, Hall or Bulky starting. I think the other three we can safely assume is a no-brainer.
Yeah. Yep. Edom Raw, we kind of touched on this too. Banks versus Williams, who is fastest, most exciting? And I'm just going to say they're both fast and both exciting.
Yeah, it's six of one, half a dozen of the other. You can't go wrong with either. This is, again, you want to compare the two, but they're both just – they're immensely talented players, and yeah, what you said. They're both exciting. They're both fast. It's you pick whichever one, whoever you prefer is who you pick.
Yeah, there is no wrong answer, really. They're both
absolutely no wrong answer.
Tremendous assets to a team. So, yeah, that pretty much covers it. B Broom CFL wants to know when stadium is finally handed over in 2034.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. Do the team facilities at Jarvis move?
Oh, the ones they built in the offices. I'm going to assume so, that all of those will be at Tim Hortons Field. I think it was a nice sort of team building thing for the guys to be working out there, but that is an office building after all. I don't know if you've ever been to One Jarvis. It's where the store is and where the offices are. I've been there like on more occasions than I can count. It's pretty small. So yeah, the facilities will obviously be moving.
Now, is that the Roar store in at the mall there? Is there still a Roar store at the
mall? They opened a Ticat store at Lime Ridge Mall a few years ago, and then they closed it, and then they opened it again either this past Christmas or the Christmas before. I don't remember. But no, really the only store, at least that I know of, unless they've made changes, is the one at Jarvis. That's the only store they have now.
All righty.
But yeah, you're talking about the Roar store at Old Center Mall, which doesn't even exist anymore. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's the one that I was thinking about.
Yeah, they tore down the mall, and now it's more like a strip mall type look.
Okay.
So yeah, there's no Ticat store there anymore. The only one that I'm aware of is the one at the team facilities.
Damn. All right. Fernie 635. Oh, this is more a question for me. How many liters of beer do you think you will consume this season?
That is definitely more of a question for you, because I'm about to alienate a lot of people and say, I don't really drink much beer.
Yeah.
I'm not a big alcohol drinker. I drink a lot of water, a lot of teas, but I do enjoy a good beer, but yeah, I don't drink a lot. So this is yours.
Yeah,
Go take it away.
I'll just say many liters, many, many liters.
Don't want to put a number on it, eh?
No, it's too hard to quantify. It's a big word there, quantify.
How'd you like that? Mark's going to be impressed.
I know. Okay, another one from B. Broom, CFL. With all the receiver options now and injury to Watts, who do you predict will be traded / released before camp?
This is a tough one.
Yeah.
As much as I like him, the one guy I could see not being in a Tiger Cat uniform come the start of the season is Bakari Grant. Because you've brought in two guys that apparently really stood out at minicamp were old high top fade Taquan Underwood himself and Tolliver, I think. I'm not so sure of his first name, but again, two like big receivers who are going to come cheaper than Grant and can probably fill his role. And like, I am a big Bakari Grant fan. When we last met was when he re-signed. I was super happy to have him back. But it wouldn't surprise me if the team let him go. It reminds me a little bit of, remember Terrence Jeffers Harris?
Yeah.
Remember when he came over when the Cats were playing the Bombers in the East Final and they released him and then he signed with Hamilton and was giving him all the secret information and it didn't amount to a hill of beans because the Cats got destroyed anyway?
Yes, I do.
They signed him to a 3-year contract either when they brought him in that time or during the offseason. And then he was released during – he was the final cut during camps in 2012. So just because you signed a deal doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be on the team. And again, if it comes to dollars and cents, if Underwood or this Tolliver kid really impress during main camp, I could see Grant being out of work.
Yeah, sad to say, I'd have to agree with you. Do you think that they could trade him for anything?
Maybe, but maybe. I remember when he was signed – or when he was waiting to be signed, Drew wrote a piece about he's in that weird sort of place where he's an American receiver who's really good, but he's not spectacular. Mm-hmm. And there's not really a place in the game for a guy like that. Those are the guys that kind of get pushed out. Like, look at Aaron Kelly. Aaron Kelly is a good receiver. I believe he was the one of the leading receivers for the Bombers last year, or he was at least with the Bombers last year. I think he had the first 100-yard game of the season in the opening week.
Mm-hmm.
He is out of a job and there's not even whispers of him signing anywhere because he's a good receiver, but he's not an exceptional receiver. And it seems to be those middle guys that sort of get pushed out of the league. So finding a trading, I'm sure if they went to him and said, we're going to cut you, we're going to trade you, I'm sure they would find someone who would be willing to bring him in at least for like a conditional pick, sort of how they traded D Webb last year to Calgary. And it was for like a conditional draft pick, but Webb had to make the team and never ended up making the team. I could see sort of something similar. For Grant's sake, I hope he's still here. And if he's not, I do hope he finds a home because I think he's a really solid player. He's a guy that teams will want to have.
Yep, I agree. All right, last question comes from Joe James Creel. Will Tim Hortons Field be ready by the end of the season? And also, Williams and Burris burn the Ticats for a TD or two?
I am out of the making prediction games on when Tim Hortons Field will be ready. Earlier, 2034 was brought up as a possible day that the Keys finally get handed over, and it wouldn't surprise me if that's the case.
Yeah.
I am not wading into those waters. I've been wrong too many times. We were promised that it would be ready before the games because it had to be, and now we're getting word that it might not be ready when the games are over. So who the hell knows?
Yes.
As for the second question, hard to say, but I wouldn't be surprised. Williams is going to be Burris' go-to guy. So if they play each other, especially at the end of the season when they'll have – like they had chemistry from their year here. They reconnect and they get back to sort of clicking like they did in 2012. Yeah, why? I don't. That doesn't mean that they like the Cats were wrong for getting. I'm kind of the question's a little weird to me because I don't know if it's like sort of one of those. Well, if they burn them, then the Cats were wrong to not bring Williams in and keep Burris. I just like yeah, sure. They're Burris gonna throw a lot of touchdowns to Williams, and it wouldn't surprise me if Williams against Hamilton.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to say that Tim Hortons Field will be ready by the end of the season, but what the hell do I know? And
You always have faith. You
I
always have
do.
faith. You're ever the optimist, and I'm ever the pessimist.
Yes, exactly. And the Williams and Burris thing, I mean, yeah, it could happen. Williams and Burris are very familiar with each other. They played a year, and they had a very good year together, 2012, I believe. So, and they'll be highly motivated against their old team to stick it to them. But yeah, I could see them connecting for a touchdown or two in the two games that they play. Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked at all. So.
But you see how I find it a weird question because like I said, like it doesn't it seem sort of like it's a question where if it happens, then everyone will pile on Austin or the team for not sort of retaining them. You understand where I'm coming from
Yeah,
that?
I hear what you're saying for sure.
Because it's like, why not put will Ricky Ray and Chad Owens burn the Cats for a TD or two, or will Burris cook up with Maurice Price for a TD? It just seems because of the combination of players that's sort of well, let's get this out of the way now, and then when it happens, we can scream for Austin. You can go on the forums and scream for Austin's head, or hit up comment sections on 3downnation.com, soon to be released CFL website. Cheap plug there. And
15
sort of like
minutes.
rip the team for getting rid of, like, you know what I mean? Like, it just seems
Yeah.
like it's a question being asked just simply because those two guys used to play for Hamilton.
Yeah, for sure. I believe they don't play until late October, so we'll have to
Yeah,
wait a while.
in the regular season, they play the last 2 weeks of the year. So first game's here in Hamilton, second game's in Ottawa. I'll be at both because I've decided I'm making the trek to Ottawa for the game. So if
Yeah,
they burn them, I'll be seeing it in person. So
it
maybe
makes
I hope they don't then.
The matchup a little bit more interesting, that's for sure.
Well, I think like I said, those Ottawa was an open square last year. It was chalk it up as a W, and Hamilton beat them in all their meetings last year. This year, especially at the end of the season, that those two games could end up meaning a lot more than they did when that schedule was released. And that to me is exciting. As much as I want the Cats to be, by the time they meet Ottawa, to be 16-0, I understand that's not realistic. I'm sure you're saying they're going to be 16-0 because you think they're still going to go undefeated to Tim Hortons Field. So
Oh yeah.
you're saying they're going to go undefeated for the next 35 years. But yeah, those last two games are going to be something to watch.
Yep. Yes, sir. And that does it for questions, my friend.
All right, and then that does it for, I guess we should call this the inaugural episode of Podski Wee Wee at 3downnation.com. As we end this recording, we are less than an hour until the site launches. This will all be old news by the time people listen to this, so I don't even know why I'm even bothering, but we are very close to an exciting new era in CFL coverage. Like we talked about at the top of the show, I am just stoked beyond stoked for this to get going. I'm excited for you to see it. I'm excited for all the fans to see it. I just can't wait, buddy. Just can't wait. You're going to be a superstar. I mentioned on Twitter yesterday when I was talking, giving all my thanks and everything, and I said you're about to be a global icon and Canadian treasure.
I'm
They're going not going to be able to know what to do with you.
like Stompin' Tom.
See, I preferred Bret Hart, but if you want to say Stompin' Tom, go nuts.
Oh, both legends.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so for this episode of Podski Wee Wee, I am Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.